Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 5, Chapter 16, Texts 7 and 8. This is one of those Sanskrit verses that are free-flowing, have no, just one continuous Sanskrit shloka. Can anyone chant this? Who's somewhat expert? No? Yeah, please try. I'm not either. I think I was there with you. Okay. It's an idea. We can read the word for word. Esham. All these divisions of Jambudvip. Madhye. Among. Ilavritam. Nama. Named Ilavrita Varsha. Abhyantara Varsham. The inner divisions, yasya, of which, nabhyam, in the navel, avastita, situated, sarvanta, entirely, sovarna, made of gold, kulagiri raja, the most famous among famous mountains. Meru, Mount Meru, Dvipa Ayama Samuna Pa Sanumaha. Sorry. Karnika Buddha, existing in the pericarp. Kovalaya, of this planetary system. Kamalasya, like a lotus flower. Murdhani, on the top. Vatrimshat, 32. Sahasra, 1,000. Yojana, yojanas, 8 miles each. Vitata, expanded. Mule, at the base. Sodasha Sahasram, 16,000 yojanas. Tavat, so much. Anta Bhumyam, within the earth. Pravishta, entered. Translation. Amidst these divisions or varshas, in the varsha named Ilavrita, which is situated in the middle of the whorl of the lotus, among these divisions or varshas is the varsha named Ilavrita, which is situated in the middle of the whorl of the lotus. Within Ilavrita varsha is Sumeru Mountain, which is made of gold. Sumeru Mountain is like the pericarp of the lotus, Bhu Mandala, planetary system. The mountain's height is the same as the width of Jambudvip, or in other words, 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles. Of that, 16,000 yojanas, 128,000 miles, are within the earth, and therefore the mountain's height Above the Earth is 84 yojanas, 672,000 miles. The mountain's width is 32,000 yojanas, or 256,000 miles, at its summit, and 16,000 yojanas at its base. We'll just read the translation for the next verse. Text 8. Just north of Ilavrita Varsha, and going further northward, one after another, are three mountains named Nila, Sveta, and Sringavan. These mark the borders of the three Varshas named Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, and Kudu, and separate them from one another. The width of these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, or 16,000 miles. Lengthwise, they extend east and west to the beaches of the ocean of salt water. Going from south to north, the length of each mountain is 1/10 of the previous mountain, but the height of them is all the same. Report. In this regard, Madhvacharya quotes the following verses from the Brahmanda Purana. And there's, it looks like, at least two or three verses. Can you quote them? It appears from these verses that aside from the sun and the moon, there is an invisible planet called Rahu. The movements of Rahu cause both solar and lunar eclipses. We suggest that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu. Nama Om Shnupadaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutadaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaudavani Pacharine Nirvisesha Shunyavani Paskita Re Satare Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sangabhi Vacha Patita Nang Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So I feel most unqualified to be sitting here in the midst of an educational institution with so many learned Brahmins and students. Still, I've been asked to give class. Prabhupada said that we should be able to speak our Krishna conscious philosophy at a moment's notice. So I've certainly been given more than that. However, I was always quite frightened to ask to be give class on verses such as these. And actually, there's a word in the second verse. Let's see. I'm not familiar. I was just about to look it up in the dictionary. What's that word? Where is it? Yeah.
What does that mean?
Thank you. So this is interesting that in the purport, Prabhupada suggests that the modern expeditions attempting to reach the moon are mistakenly going to Rahu. I have one story about Srila Prabhupada that we were personally involved in. We were at the... Prabhupada was visiting Washington, D.C. in 1976 in the summer, and the Bhaktivedanta Institute members were there with him, including Bhakti Surabhamadar Maharaj. And there were many discussions about the structure of the universe and also about the moonshot. Prabhupada was quite strong about that, that we didn't go. So after some of those discussions, it was Mangala Arati the next day, and then Hari Sari Prabhu came into Mangala Arati and he asked Vishakha Devi, my wife, and I to come into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada wanted to see us. And I've never had that happen before, Prabhupada calling me. I never had that happen before, Prabhupada calling me into his room during Mangala Arati, so I didn't know what to expect. So we paid obeisances, and Prabhupada was sitting there at his table, and he had a lamp on next to him, and it was very dramatic. He had his hands in his hands supporting his chin, his head. His eyes were closed, and then he looked up at us, and he said a few words, and that was all. He said, "Take it from me, they didn't go." Now, why Prabhupada called us in to tell us that, I'm still today not sure. But he confirmed his strong opinion to us. So that's my comment on that verse. But just to go back to some of the discussions previously, previous verses in this particular chapter, I'd like to speak a few things about that for my own clarification and hopefully realization. That Prabhupada makes the point in verse 1 of this chapter that the planetary systems, how they're situated and the description of them was known a very, very long time ago. But it's not that that modern science has given us this information all of a sudden because of our expertise in science, astronomy especially. But these things were known a very, very long time ago, and this is true with so many descriptions in the Bhagavatam that are that are proven by science today. The descriptions of the embryo in the womb, how it develops, is a very astonishing description. And I recently saw a very well-known scientist. He was speaking at a TED conference, TED, and that's the members of TED, actually the most influential people in the world, scientists and educators and so many people in the higher echelons. And the scientist was well known, I don't remember his name, but he had a video of the embryo developing within the womb. And it was something that they'd never, it was a breakthrough in that type of examination of the development of the fetus. And at the end of his discussion, he said he was completely amazed at the information they got from that examination. And he indicated something of the how it must be, everything must be conducted by a intelligent being, basically. And there must be a spiritual nature behind this structure. That was quite astonishing. I'm not sure how the other members of the TED Foundation took that. He was quite amazed. In 1976, we were studying college textbooks, biology textbooks, because we were doing a film called Spark of Life, How We're Not the Body, how everything is coming from spirit, not matter, that life is coming from spirit. So we had to examine the arguments of the textbooks at that time, the materialistic ideas, because we had, our film was about two college students discussing Bhagavad Gita on a college campus, how we're not the body and how life comes from life. So in that biology textbook, it said that, one astonishing statement, it said that there's no reason to believe in any kind of spiritual reason for life. And here it was, right in the textbook. So Prabhupada called this slaughterhouse education. That's quite a heavy term. But my realization on that is that if we're being educated, then we're not giving any kind of spiritual instruction. You know, who we are, where we came from, what is the nature of life, what we should be doing, where we should be going. Then it's slaughterhouse education, because we have to come back birth after birth and get slaughtered again and again and again. So it's a very apt yet very heavy description. So everything is given to us in the Bhagavatam. In the second verse, it's a very nice analysis of how Krishna's external energy. How simply, if we meditate on Krishna's external energy, we can become self-realized. We can understand Krishna. It says that when the mind is fixed on Krishna in his external feature, it is brought to pure goodness or the transcendental platform. So in the Bhagavatam, we know that in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it discussed how creation is manifest in the different stages and in the different descriptions of the material universe. So we're brought from the material creation in Bhagavatam all the way to the pastimes of the Lord in the 10th canto. I remember Srila Prabhupada in South India, he met one Mr. Balu. And Mr. Balu hosted Srila Prabhupada in his home. And on the second day that Srila Prabhupada was there, Mr. Balu asked Srila Prabhupada to narrate Ras Lila. So Prabhupada's his response was that I am not qualified. So this is the case of someone jumping to the Ras Lila and not caring about the description of creation or the description of the planetary system. But actually, this is the process. We understand this first, or at least we have an idea of how things go on. And then we go to higher subject matter. There was a darshan in New Vrindavan, and Sankirtan Prabhu was sitting in that darshan. And there were many sannyasis and GBC also in the darshan. And Sankirtan Prabhu happened to be in the front. So during the darshan, Srila Prabhupada looked at him and he asked him one question. He said, "Are you trying to understand our philosophy?" And Sankirtan was so flabbergasted that Prabhupada addressed him out of all the others. He couldn't answer. But he appreciated that Srila Prabhupada asked, "Are you trying?" And because understanding the philosophy is not so easy. There's two understandings. There's gyan, there's knowledge, understanding, that type of understanding, but there's vigyan, and that's realized knowledge. So it's interesting, there are two words in Sanskrit for that. So realized knowledge is not so easy. And the longer we are practicing Krishna consciousness, the more we realize how much we don't understand. Oh. In that purport, Srila Prabhupada, of the second verse, Prabhupada said that nothing is material. Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk in Brooklyn. Maybe it was New York, but it was a very run-down section of the city. And one devotee apologized to Srila Prabhupada how it's such a messy area, trash all over the place, run-down buildings. And Srila Prabhupada looked at him, he said, "It is Vaikuntha." So was Srila Prabhupada seen Vaikuntha? Sometimes it's said that the pure devotee, he sees Krishna everywhere. Is he seeing Krishna everywhere, actually the two-armed form of Krishna? Actually, some of our acharyas, they say that actually by seeing, they see Krishna through his external energy. So by seeing his energies, they're reminded of Krishna. So this was certainly the case of, you know, the great devotees, that they see everything in relationship to Krishna. Another time on a morning walk in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada surprised us. He entered a temple of goddess Katyayani, or Durga, and he paid obeisances in front of the deities. And we were all very surprised. So after Prabhupada paid his obeisances and respects, he came out. He didn't say anything. And then one devotee asked him, Srila Prabhupada, why are we paying obeisances to goddess Katyayani, Durga? And Prabhupada gave a very amazing answer. He said, I was thinking of the gopis praying to goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. So this is an instance of being reminded of Krishna through the external energy. In this case, the proprietor, or the controller of the external energy, and that's goddess Durga. So nothing is material, and actually in our situation here in the material world, we're actually completely encased in and surrounded by Krishna's external energy, these bodies, earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, and false ego. We're completely encased in Krishna's energies. So, unfortunately, so many people are not understanding that these conditioned souls are not understanding that the nature of their bodies, you know, who they are. They don't understand that they're soul. They think they're the body. And what what misery and anguish they must be undergoing in old age. The body is falling apart, so much sickness, and they have no understanding. And therefore the Vaishnava fully understands his position, fully understands Krishna's position, fully understands the conditioned soul's position, and he is very compassionate, and he preaches Krishna consciousness. That's his that's his only business. So our only business as disciples is to follow in the footsteps of our spiritual master and to try to distribute this knowledge. So in that same purport in text 3, Srila Prabhupada says that actually Maharaj Pariksit was in no need for geographical knowledge of the universe. But still, there's a description of it. Maharaj Pariksit asked Sukadeva Goswami to describe everything in detail, including the structure of the universe. So he's interested in this also because Krishna has created that through his different energies. So we're interested in everything. Nothing should be rejected or given up. Everything has its relationship to Krishna. And if we see in that way, it's actually a very wonderful consciousness. We should be satisfied. Another very nice statement in the purport in text 4. Prabhupada says we should be satisfied by knowledge given through the parampara system. But actually, I'd like to revise that a bit. Actually, Srila Prabhupada wanted, especially the Bhaktivedanta Institute scientists, to try to prove our philosophy through their science. Prove how Krishna's different energies are working. So in that sense, modern science may go beyond some of the descriptions in the Bhagavatam in terms of what may be discovered by our Krishna conscious scientists. So the Parampara system is a very precious link that we have to this knowledge. We should be very careful to preserve it. In my presentation tonight on video, we'll talk a little bit about the difficulties in the early days in consciousness with neophyte devotees, the first 5 years of the movement, and some of the difficulties that arose in terms of understanding that were aparampara, went outside our parampara understanding. And Srila Prabhupada dealt with that. There's one very, very interesting story by Suhotra Swami. He had been reading different books on some persons who were trying to understand the Vedic technology, like the Vimanas, the Vedic airplanes, how they were powered, how they ran, this and that. And so Suhotra Swami wanted to ask Srila Prabhupada, what is Vedic technology? And could try to get some idea so he could preach to these people. He was reading their books, he wanted to connect with them. So he finally got this question out after in a darshan in Chicago. And before he could finish his sentence, what is Vedic technology, Srila Prabhupada almost cut him off at the end. He said, it is Guru Parampara. Now, if we think about that, that's a very profound statement. Because by Guru Parampara, by accepting Guru Parampara and understanding the philosophy of Guru, you know, given to us ultimately by Krishna through his devotees, we can actually go back to Godhead. And that's Vedic technology, transferring ourselves from being encased in the material world all the way back to Godhead. This is Vedic technology. Interesting answer. So we should be very, very careful to preserve what we've been given. Sometimes people have started movements and some decades later or even hundreds of years later, their original idea for their movement has been completely changed. And it's interesting that Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna to reestablish the disciplic succession. He said it was broken. So if that knowledge can be broken during Vedic times, what to speak of now? We have to be very, very careful. If we're a little bit off, we'll go more and more and more off as time goes on. So it's very important that we have these institutions of learning. Srila Prabhupada wanted this very much. During his time, he said there are no institutions that are teaching this Vedic knowledge. So we're very happy to see the university here and the work they're doing. You should be very happy to be enrolled, the students who are here, be very happy to be enrolled in this educational institution. I call it a dream college education. In my time, I went to the University of California at Berkeley, a very prestigious university, all kinds of very big, big professors. One of my professors was Edward Teller. Does anyone ever heard the name? Edward Teller? He actually invented the H-bomb. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the demoniac persons who create unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Well, this one of them was my teacher. These are the kind of teachers we we had. So, you know, in my 16 years of education, there was no spiritual training in the schools. As a result, I came out, and when I read Bhagavad Gita, I understood nothing when I first read. I had a little pamphlet of Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the paperbacks, very early editions, before the hardbound edition came out. I remember reading that, not understanding anything, but I could realize this was something very valuable. And therefore, I kept reading. So if we have no spiritual education, it makes for a very difficult start. So you're very, very fortunate. So we'll stop here. Are there any comments or questions? Yes. Study his books very carefully and understand his teachings and instructions thoroughly. You know, we can have some opinion and we can sometimes verify that in Srila Prabhupada's books, but in other places he balances certain statements with other statements. We need to have an overall view of his teachings. And like that.
You've seen this kind of book through many changes.
Last
4 years. So how are we doing?
That's a big question. It might put me on the spot. I think overall we're doing pretty well in traveling and seeing the preaching that's going on. It's quite enlivening. Some places are not doing as well, you know, but we need to support the devotees in those places. In my travels, I've been to a few places like that, and the devotees were very appreciative of any visit by senior devotees. So I think it's important that we support, we try to support each other. That's the nature of a Vaishnava. They see the good in everyone, they don't criticize. And if there's, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would so-called criticize, but that would be for uplifting the devotees. There was no trace of envy in Srila Prabhupada's heart. But in our case, there probably is. Any conditioned soul has this problem. So we have to understand if we do have that problem and check it. If there's criticism arises in the mind, I know myself, it certainly happens. So we have to understand, you know, ourselves. If we don't understand the position we're at in devotional service, how can we make progress? It's very important. Nectar of Devotion states that. And we should have patience, a lot of patience also. It's also enunciated by Rupa Goswami. Patience, determination, and enthusiasm. Very important. Patience, sometimes we forget. But it's a long-term process. It's a very gradual process for most of us. Srila Prabhupada said that many times. It's a gradual process. And that's why the culture of Krishna consciousness is so important. We need to have, you know, a culture, a society. So Srila Prabhupada emphasized in his later years of Varnashram, the importance of Varnashram. He said privately, we need Varnashram, otherwise why are our devotees falling down? So we need, Varnashram means society. We need a society where we can associate with one another and everything's in place in the Varnashram. Varna and ashrams are all in place and people are following. And Prabhupada, you know, it's Daivi Varnashram. A God-conscious society. Prabhupada's final translation, some of them are recorded on film. He talks about Varnashram, and then he, in the same sentence, he says, rising early, going to Mangal Arati. Like that. So, probably, yeah. I'm sorry, Jiva Tattva is born? This is neophyte. It's neophyte. You know, Prabhupada never exhibited, never indicated anything like that. Actually, a Krishna conscious person is absorbed in anything related to Krishna. So that attitude is to be rejected. And if we think, you know, the books, sometimes I've heard the books are repetitious. That's another bogus thing. You know, the devotee will relish everything, no matter how many times it's stated. Relish each and every item. Prabhupada heard his books. He would listen to his books, you know, very basic rudimentary philosophy. And he would be absorbed. I've seen him. In 1972, Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada went to Vrindavan to speak on nectar devotion. So the devotees were thinking, you know, we've been in the movement a few years, now we're ready to hear higher subjects, and Prabhupada's going to deliver that in Vrindavan. He started with the introduction. This is the very, very basics. And he didn't get very far into the nectar devotion. So we need to hear these things over and over again. As a neophyte, we need to hear them over and over again. As an advanced devotee, we relish everything. So what is the question of repetition? You know, being boring. Doesn't exist. Yes. Oh. Okay. Maybe. Interesting. Yes.
One of the things that I've heard over the years is caution, the movement that we've fallen into, the uses of the Christianity, where we would go.
No, it's not so easy. That will happen with, you know, many members of ISKCON, that, you know, sliding away and kind of drifting off into so-called normal life. In the beginning, when a few devotees started to leave, devotees were concerned, so they went to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, don't be concerned with how many leave. No, how many... What was it?
Don't be surprised who leaves.
Be surprised who stays. Yeah. So that's kind of indicative of the nature of this material world, is that we become enthusiastic for something very much, and then it diminishes. But that's material. The opposite of that is spiritual. We become enthusiastic and then we become more enthusiastic. So if we maintain a solid core of enthusiastic devotees who are advancing in spiritual life, that other may go on, and it will go on. But we have to keep that enthusiastic core of leaders and those who are relishing the programs as Prabhupada gave them. Actually, the programs are perfect. And if we meditate sometimes with the Sanskrit, we don't meditate on the Sanskrit because we don't understand the Sanskrit. So it's important to, if we don't learn Sanskrit, to learn the English for those prayers and meditate like that on the meaning. Sometimes it becomes ritual. I'm speaking for myself also. Sometimes we have to force ourselves to get up and go to Mangalarti. Pardon me, by the way, for not attending this morning. I shouldn't be sitting here because of that. Prabhupada said in the early days in Henry Street, if you don't go to Mangalarti, no prasadam. So it's a struggle. But when we relish it, that keeps us coming back. That keeps us desiring more. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Madhurya, what is it? It goes along with the Sharanagati and Gitavali, his compilation of songs. What's it called? Madhurya? Kandimin, is it? No, I'm sorry. That's Vishnu. Kalyana Kalpataru? That's it. Right? No. It's in that introduction to Kalyana Kalpataru, he gives a very nice description of these moments of spiritual realization that we have. Sometimes we get flashes of, and he describes that as the mercy of Bhakti Devi. And he further describes it as like lightning lighting up the ground and everything around you. So it's a very wonderful description. But, I think all of us have had periods of, you know, some very nice realizations, otherwise we may not be here so long. So we want more and more of that until we become fully immersed in that consciousness. So therefore, to do that, it takes some sacrifice and austerity. And that's what sometimes this is. Coming to the programs every day, day after day. But the result is wonderful. So we should continue. Anything else? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.